CinemaJaw is brought to you by Emporium. Emporium's three Chicagoland locations combine the best arcade games, craft beer, and live events. Check out emporiumchicago.com/CPC for a free drink or game tokens. And we thank them for their support. Listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on Division Street in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Ryan, the movie guy. And sitting alongside us, as always, is our engineer and local filmmaker, Elias Rodriguez.
How's it going, Jawheads?
This week on CinemaJaw, Matt, I open it up with a statement. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready for it.
And this hit me just this past week after seeing a couple movies in the theater, and I feel confident saying this. 2016 is the worst summer movie season of my life.
I don't even have much to refute that with. In fact, I probably agree with you. It's been a real stinkeroo.
So disappointed overall with the summer movie fair. It's usually the fun time, the popcorn time. I've had no fun, really. Well, I mean, there's been one here or there that I enjoyed, but not the usual crop of films.
Obviously, Captain America Civil War is the big exception.
And because of that, we got talking about it, and I took the Snapchat and I snapped, you know? I did a snap where I just went crazy.
You snapped?
I just went nuts and said, you know, this is the worst summer movie season that I can remember.
Yeah, there were some expletives coming
there was. There was. And so we came up with the idea for this week's topic.
Did you put that on your story?
My story.
Oh,
yeah.
So people can actually go.
Yes, follow me, Ride the Movie Guy on Snapchat. You can see my story. But that gave us the idea for the show. Top five worst summer flops of the past 10 years. And we'll see if the listeners agree to us. These are films that were highly anticipated that did not do good, A, at the box office, yes, but also just underwhelmed everyone's expectations.
Yeah.
You agree? I mean, because some of the movies end up being pretty decent, you know, money-wise at the box office, but it was still underwhelming in the sense that it was maybe thought to be a tentpole, go on to make sequels, so forth, and that one film ended up being just sort of a dud, and just everything died there. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah. It's a shame, man. I mean, this summer, I was really looking forward to some of these movies, and they've sucked.
Yeah. And we got, it just keeps going. The string of suck keeps going. So we'll see. We got a jam-packed jaw, though, in addition to that.
Oh, yes. This is very apropos, because it's just us guys, so we are going eye for an eye on Sausage Party.
Perfect. And we have reviews of Suicide Squad and Jason Bourne.
Yes, that's exciting. And Matt, because of Sausage Party coming out in theaters, you will be taking Elias on. Always heated battles and trivia, a lot of fun.
Without our pants on.
You will be taking
it is a sausage party.
Elias on in Seth Rogen movie trivia.
This is exciting because longtime listeners of this podcast will know that to this date,
come on.
I am undefeated against Elias
Rodriguez.
You
cannot keep running with that joke anymore. It's over.
Well,
it's over.
It's not a joke. I mean, once he beats me, we can finally put this thing to rest.
Yeah. You're probably batting 100 against me.
100%. 100%. Every time I step to the plate, I knock it out of the park.
Oh, Matt.
This will be no exception.
There's also an adaptation coming out, Pete's Dragon. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's another of these live action adaptations of a classic animated film.
Yeah. I'm excited.
What do you mean you're excited?
It looks really cute.
Oh, come on, Matt.
Mark Ruffalo's in it.
This is the new fad now. Let's just make live-action adaptations of the classic animated films. I'm sick of it. It's stupid.
It's not stupid.
Yeah, it is.
It's a great little trend that
we're
seeing.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Cinema War.
Ooh, Elias is going to have his hands full there. Wow.
Elias, do you think you can remain impartial?
I think I have in the past.
I think we should let Phil judge the Cinema War.
No, Phil, no. He can sit over there and just enjoy.
Phil, the editor.
Yes.
All right.
And if that wasn't enough for you, when we fly solo, Matt, we have determined that we are going to do a CinemaJaw riddle. This is where we have a riddle. It can be an actor, actress,
or director. Well, not necessarily only when we fly solo, though.
No, but usually that's a good time to do it.
I agree.
And we ask the listeners to write in if they think they have the correct answer, and you can win a prize pack. And very exciting, this year we're actually keeping track of all the correct answers. And the first person, the first jawhead out there, that reaches five correct answers will win a mega prize this year.
Mega prize. What's it going to be?
To be determined.
Okay, all
yes.
right.
Yes, but we'll have some
lock
fun
of
with it.
A lock of Ride the Movie Guy's beard hair.
Nobody wants that.
No, probably not. We get in trouble.
Yeah. Good stuff. So we do have a jam-packed jaw, as always.
As always.
Yes. So without further ado, we go to this first segment. Instead of jumping right away to Eye for an Eye, we go to the Cinema Jaw riddle.
All right, Ryan. This week's riddle is this. Diane Keaton has played my mom. I have been engaged to someone who travels through time twice and even married to one of them. I like to play newspaper reporters and in 2012 suffered from amnesia. Who am I?
That's a good one.
It is. Honestly, I don't know.
Of course you don't know, Matt. You're clueless in trivia every week.
Well, this is a riddle, not trivia.
Yes. Well, if you think you know the answer to that riddle, the easiest way to respond to us is our email, which is feedback@cinemajaw.com. And you can also hit us up on Twitter by direct messaging. Or if you're not into any of those and you'd like Facebook, shoot us a direct message on Facebook at Cinemajaw. Either one of those will get you in. And all correct answers will go into a magic hat that we have here. And Matt will pull out a winner.
Sounds like fun. Yeah, that's good.
And we will reread the riddle at the end of the podcast so you hear it one more time and then you can write us. Perfect.
I agree. This is perfect. It's a tough one. Should have just put it in at the end so they have to suffer through the entire podcast.
All right. It brings us to a segment, Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, Elias.
Yes, Eye for an Eye, Sausage Party. A sausage link strives to discover the truth about his existence. This adult animated film is rated R and features the voices of Seth Rogen, Kristen Wiig, Jonah Hill, Selma Hayek, and James Franco. We throw it over to Rye. Interested or ignore?
I'd be really interested if this was a short film, 15 minutes long, because I think that's what this idea can sustain, is about a 15, 20-minute idea. To see them flesh this thing out to a 90-minute film is going to be a bit of a stretch, but I'm slightly interested. I like a laugh.
Yeah, hey, you know, sausages stretch. That's what they do. I think this looks like something that's original and creative, and I'm into it. Interested.
Yeah, I think it's, when I first saw the trailer, I was blown away, and I was like, yes, there should be more of this stuff. But I kind of agree with you, Ryan, and I think that it might be to the extreme, and it seems like it is in the trailer, so some of the stuff might get a little too intense or a little too old. But I would love it if it opens up a whole genre of this type of films, you know. To have these amazing like animations.
Ralph Bashke's been doing it since the 60s. Dude.
Has he?
Yeah, hell yeah.
With Pixar-style animation?
Well, of course not.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, what's the diff? I mean, you mean the content or the...
I'm talking about the style of animation.
Oh, okay.
That we're all getting used to nowadays, you know?
Fair enough.
My brother had an idea when we were in our comedy group together of whistles, different types of whistles, you know, party whistles and, you know, referee whistles and stuff like that. And it was very similar in this vein. It was going to be called Don't Blow It. So it would be amazing. if, you know, this paves the way for that kind of genre.
That was going to be a feature length?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Did you guys write it?
A couple scenes. Maybe I should put down my She-Hulk script that I'm working on.
Yeah, pick back up Don't Blow It, man. That's awesome.
All right. We actually have some test animations that we had this artist do. They look pretty cool, too.
Wow. You're really wetting my whistle.
Hey.
Three interesteds for Sausage Party. Nice. We'll get a review out there for you. Speaking of reviews, Matt, the 2016 summer superhero flicks continues, and this time the focus is on the bad guys. DC's group of supervillains are all gathered up and asked to work together to take down someone or something that is even more evil than they are. Can this band of misfits make us cheer for them, or are they just another misstep in the DC universe? Matt Kay and I hit the theater to find out.
Deadshot. Guy shoots people. He's a crocodile. And he eats people. Burns people. You're possessed by a witch. And she's just crazy.
What was that? I should kill everyone and escape? Sorry. The voices. I'm kidding. That's not what they really said.
The hell's wrong with you people?
We're bad guys. It's what we do.
Right off the bat, let me start with what the Suicide Squad had working against them. They had to introduce numerous characters, all of which who are making their big screen debut, and then they had to involve them in some kind of plot that would get us to start to like them. They have to do this all in under 2 hours, as that seems to be the maximum allotted time superhero fans can keep their attention span for. To try to accomplish this, they had to resort to the most basic filmmaking tropes. The introduction of the characters is done by the dreaded case file openings. in which Viola Davis opens each file, and we are then shown a flashback about how evil each character is and how they were eventually caught. This also lets viewers know which characters are more important than others based on how much time they spent on their backgrounds. Will Smith as Deadshot and Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn get the most screen time. More on them in a minute. Shortly after the introductions, the plot, and Matt, I'm being generous saying that the film has a plot, starts to take shape. An evil spirit slash witch turns against Viola Davis and decides she is going to destroy the human race. I think. She finds her brother's spirit and unleashes it to help her on her conquest of destruction. This leads to them creating an army of black, mutated, liquid beings. I think. Meanwhile, the famed Joker, played by Jared Leto, is on the loose, and his only mission is to find his girlfriend, Harley Quinn, and free her from the Suicide Squad. I think. In short, this was a mumbling mess of a story. Director David Ayer decided to focus way too heavily on making each character as cool as hell and forgot, totally forgot, that he needs a compelling story to get the audience to care about them. The ending CGI fest carried zero weight to it, and to top it off, the way the Suicide Squad stops the evil witch is quite stupid. If it was not for some fun performances, Margot Robbie being a highlight, this would have been a total waste. Suicide Squad did not drive me to committing suicide, but it was close.
Oh, man.
Matt, superhero films are your specialty. Please enlighten us with your Suicide Squad thoughts.
Well, first of all, I take serious umbrage in the whole, you say that superhero audiences can only pay attention for 2 hours.
That's about the length of most superhero films.
Untrue. If you look at most of the Marvel films, Avengers especially, sometimes they get closer to three. You know, we're getting into Peter Jackson territory with some of the Marvel films. So screw you on that one. Otherwise, I largely agree with you. There are some good things. There are some good things in Suicide Squad, which is the tremendous acting talent that somehow manages to burn its way through this ham-fisted lack of a script. The story is absolutely absent in this. All the laziest tropes, as you mentioned, are carted out before us, and it's a damn shame. You have to put this movie up against Guardians of the Galaxy, right? Because this is, I think, their Guardians play. That's what they were going for aesthetically, and that's just where they are in the schedule of the DC Universe copying Marvel. And when you look at Guardians, it starts off with that scene where Star-Lord's mom passes away, and immediately we have very high emotional stakes versus the well-pointed-out, Rye, lazy, ultimate trope crap, worst writing ever of the case file openings to explain a multi-character cast. No, introduce them one by one. Let them meet each other. Get creative. I don't care. But don't do a case file opening beginning. I mean, the first 30 seconds, we're opening case files already. Come on, guys. And there were some cool action moments. And as I mentioned, the acting really was a plus. I agree with you. The finale, so stupid and contrived. This just didn't cross the finish line. I will say the second half of it was better than the first half.
Yeah, it seemed like it lost the audience quite quickly. It had that feeling. Like, I thought about 20 minutes, 30 minutes into it, I thought, oh boy, this is just going to be a mess. And I think it did turn a corner a little bit. Not so much for me, but you had mentioned right after the screening, it sort of turned a corner and you were starting to buy into the action a little bit.
Yeah, I was having fun with the characters because, like I said, there's one scene in particular, and it's always the quiet moments where we really get to know the characters and enjoy who they are. There was a quiet moment where they're all having a drink together, the Suicide Squad, and there was just acting. They were just acting off one another. It wasn't about the stupid plot. And that moment I really, really enjoyed. And I think that was where this film turned the corner. And again, I hate to beat the dead horse, but it's really about these acting performances. Although I will say, while Will Smith is great, in this movie, Will Smith plays Will Smith.
Too much of an action star for you.
Yeah, there was no acting. And here's a guy who played Ali, and he was in Pursuit of Happiness, which are two amazing performances. And what was that one recently with the football one, Concussion, you know, where he plays characters that are very not Will Smith. But here he is, Mr. Box Office, just being Will Smith from Bad Boys, you know, he puts a little scowl on when he pulls the trigger, holds his gun sideways, and it's Will Smith.
Yeah, I think we're coming to a point here that's crossing a line here with films, where I think filmmakers are shooting these films. Maybe he shot maybe a 3-hour long film. Who knows what exactly David Ayer shot? And then they start editing it down, and they're trying to get to the point where they got to keep all the big action sequences in the movie. They got to have their key moments in the movie. But in that, the story somewhere starts to get lost. I mean, I was literally lost watching this movie. The first time these army members of the Witch show up, completely baffled. Were you? I had no clue what was going on. All of a sudden, this like liquid type being starts fighting people.
Well,
and there's no rhyme or reason on why the person should be there.
You know, I've played enough video games, and this movie is written as a video game, so I've played enough video games to know what, and you know what, that sounds like a dig on video games. It's not meant to be. I wasn't as thrown off by that as you seem to have been. So no, I kind of rolled with that.
Second part, not much of a spoiler, but at one point, the Suicide Squad is actually saving Viola Davis's character.
Right, of course.
But I literally did not know that was what was happening. It took me forever until they almost rescued her, until I realized what
was
going on.
No, that was intentional.
But usually you have some hint as a viewer.
That was supposed to be a reveal.
But you have some hint. I mean, there was nothing. Like, it wasn't
actually like that.
It wasn't a reveal in the sense of like, ooh, they fooled me.
It was. No, that's how it was intended. Yes, it
was
a magic trick. Yeah.
No, it was not. It was.
I think it was, too.
It was more of a reveal that was like, oh, this is, I don't know what's going on in this film.
No, and
maybe
and,
I was missed there, but I was totally confused.
And they were on a mission to rescue somebody, the one person who they needed to get out of there, this disaster scene. And then it turned out to be Viola Davis.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the Joker a little bit.
Yes. Well, I wanted to run down the characters, okay?
Go
and
for
I
it.
Want to get your opinion on it because you're more the comic book guy. What was sort of interesting here was I never even heard of Deadshot. I really don't know anything about Harley Quinn. I don't know any of these characters. So let's start with Deadshot, Will Smith. You'd sort of already alluded. Too much Will Smith for you.
Yeah, he played Will Smith. And, you know, this is basically Bullseye, but like Bullseye meets Deadpool in a way, I guess. I don't know. I'm a Marvel guy.
We moved to Margot Robbie playing Harley Quinn. I said one of the highlights. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Probably the best character in the movie. I like Deadshot, but he just didn't do it for me. She absolutely, the performance was great. Obviously, Margot Robbie is not difficult on your eyes, and she put in a great performance with that costume and everything was very cool. I liked it.
Now, Jared Leto, the Joker. You had mentioned something about the Joker, some insight to the different Jokers throughout the genre. So expel on that.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm breaking new ground here. So Jack Nicholson's Joker was the gangster. Heath Ledger's Joker was the anarchist. What are they going for with Jared Leto? I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be so narrowly defined. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. I mean, what is he, like an underground kingpin? Is he a casino operator? Like, is he a club kid? What's with the tattoos? I just didn't understand his character. He had no grounding in reality whatsoever. He was like a cartoon character.
And I do feel sort of sorry for him. He's coming after Heath Ledger's wonderful performance. And you know everybody's going to go in there viewing him against Heath Ledger's performance. And so that was like one of those deals where it's almost like a no-win situation, unless he was going to do something so drastically different. But this incarnation of the Joker is at least somewhat similar. I'm not saying, you know,
it's like they got
one for one, but it is in that same vein. It's not necessarily the Jack Nicholson Joker.
Yeah, no, it's James Franco from Spring Breaker Joker. That's what it is. I mean, I actually think Jared Leto did a good job as far as acting. Like, he was scary, but at the same time, highly romanticized, even sexualized version of the Joker, which was interesting, I guess. Yes, it was interesting, but ultimately, I just don't think the character was written well enough for him to get a handle completely on it.
I think this works somewhat because of Viola Davis at the center of it. I mean, you needed like a strong actress there to be able to sort of wield the Suicide Squad around. And she's somewhat menacing of a person, sort of,
I guess,
commanding of the screen.
Sure.
She worked for me.
I liked
Viola Davis.
Yeah.
And then there's the sort of the misfits of the Suicide Squad. Were you familiar with these guys? Or is it one guy that torches himself, but he's not Torch?
Yeah, no, not so much. And again, I'm a Marvel guy.
Okay.
So these were largely new to me.
Okay. And then that Croc guy, who's more like an alligator.
Him I know. He's a classic Batman villain.
Is he?
Yeah.
But he did not look that good, I didn't think, on screen.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't like the whatever they used, the costume,
I think it was
the makeup.
Yeah, mostly practical makeup effects.
I didn't like it so much.
Hmm.
His voice, I don't know. There was something about his character that just said phony to me.
I get it. It did seem like a Saturday morning cartoon. It was real messy.
There was one particular scene that the Joker and Margot Robbie inside a pool. Let's just say that. I don't want to go any further. And that was a wonderful moment. But again, it just felt, I think that was in one of the flashbacks. And one of my complaints with this movie is when they went to go for the cool scene, it was during the flashback, which is the easiest way to set a scene up. Oh, and then there's this. And then they just cut to the one cool scene after another cool scene instead of letting it happen organically within the story of a cool scene. That is so much more rewarding,
right,
as a viewer.
Like Guardians of the Galaxy,
right,
played out organically. They meet each other one by one. It comes
so
together.
Much, yes.
It coalesces.
Such weak screenwriting here. It's ridiculous.
Really, seriously, it's terrible. It was like written by a high school freshman.
Yes. I'm going, boy, oh boy, I'm going 1.5 Jaws for Suicide Squad.
I'll go 2. The middle of the rotor, because I think the acting and the action and the color and everything, the kinetic energy will carry it across for most audiences.
Boy, DC can't catch a break lately.
Man, they better get it together or just abandon it, man. I mean, do something else.
We need Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I will say that trailer looked pretty good. I'm excited for Wonder Woman.
Me too, man.
All right, speaking of new movies, Matt, one more for you. And I missed this one when it came out and mentioned what a fan I am. Rule of thumb in Hollywood, you dip into the well 4 times in a series, you're going to have a stinker on your hands. Such is the case with Jason Bourne. I've made my voice clear when it comes to the Bourne series. The first 3 films in the series made what I considered the perfect trilogy. It was a nice blend of art with a successful blockbuster series. A story arc that made sense to have 3 films. An actor that grew into an action star before our eyes. Action sequences that kept upping the ante in each film but never crossed the line of cinema believability. And finally, a series that had the perfect ending. But in Hollywood, you never leave money on the table. So here we are, Matt, with a 4th Matt Damon Bourne film. And it sucked. This angered me. I mean, this really angered me. It made me sad. I actually had trouble falling asleep after seeing it because it put me in such a bad mood. Maybe I should not care so much, but I do. A better name for this film would have been The Bourne Dud or The Bourne Redundancy. Director Paul Greengrass had to figure out a way to bring back the character after ending his story arc so perfectly. What they came up with, involving his dad and the conspiracy, did not work. This time around, Bourne seemed to lose his vocal cords, as Matt Damon says less than 100 words in the film. Tommy Lee Jones plays the new government bad guy and is nothing more than a caricature of himself. It's a total joke. Newcomer to the series, Alicia Vikander, is as blank as a white piece of paper, literally nothing to her character. Making matters worse is the sped-up plot points to make everything simplified. The worst case of this being how Jason Bourne, who is the most sought-after man by the CIA, casually makes his way back into the U.S. using a fake passport. I rolled my eyes. The famed chase scenes that made this series known did not feel fresh. In fact, nothing in this movie felt fresh. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, so sad to say it, 1 jaw. I wish it did not exist. I wish I never saw it. I was just disappointed.
Just tell me it sucked one more time.
It sucked! Oh my God. I really had a rough time watching this one.
Yeah.
There's one other part. I have to talk about this part. It's so absolutely ridiculous. I already complained about how people seem to jump around the globe in these spy movies like Mission Impossible or What It Being. And this one, no exception. You got the bad agent that's, you know, on Bourne's level that Tommy Lee Jones goes to send after him. And he goes to Greece. He gets off a plane, and it's right in the middle of this big revolt going on in Greece. So there's all these people all over the street. And he attempts to kill Jason Bourne. Now, he misses his chance, and Bourne gets on a motorcycle. And somehow, way over in Washington, D.C., they're tracking the motorcycle in every single turn, I mean precise to an inch, they know exactly where Jason Bourne's on the motorcycle. And she, Vikander, says to this agent, you have 1 shot to shoot him. She's already telegraphing where he can climb up a building and shoot him with a sniper rifle while he's on this motorcycle. And it's already so stupid, I can't believe this. And then she says to him in a dress, imagine you're in Greece for the first time, or even any city that you've even visited to, and someone yelled out in a dress like, 8th floor, 200 and Superior Street. He's like, I'm on it. And they're like, you have no time, 30 seconds. He already knows where he's going. He goes up the building, gets his perfect shot on
Bourne. And he doesn't even know who's talking to him?
It's ridiculous. It's so dumb. It's just ridiculous. I was so disappointed. It really broke my heart because I loved the Bourne series.
Well, you still have the original three, man.
I know. I know what I think I'm going to do. And I decided I was walking out of the theater and I thought, I'm going to go to that clinic that Jim Carrey goes to in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, uh-huh. and I'm going to get my memory erased that I ever saw this movie. To me, it's never going to exist. So if you ever bring up this film, probably after Friday at 2 p.m., I won't even know it existed.
This is great, man. This is great. I got to go there, too. A couple films I want to erase.
One jaw for Jason Bourne. Whew. If you disagree or agree, please shoot me a tweet at Rye the Movie Guy. I'd love to hear someone disagree with me on this one. Boy, what a pile of junk. And that is our topic this week, Matt.
Piles of junk.
Yes. I feel like 2016, as I mentioned, awful.
You know, and 2015 wasn't all that much better either, man. Come on, guys. Let's step it up. Let's step it up. Am I getting it started? All right. Happily. Here's my first piece of crap.
This is flops of the last 10 years, summer movies.
Yes, and they just get worse from here, people. How can it get much worse than Adam Sandler? My number five is Pixels. You know what? Like you said about Jason Bourne, I at one time was almost proud to call myself an Adam Sandler fan. It's easy to forget that at one time we all kind of liked Adam Sandler because now he sucks so bad, but he was good. I mean, there was Punch Drunk Love and Spanglish, but even before that, like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, even Waterboy, Wedding Singer, he was good. I was thinking Pixels could be his big comeback. It looked like it also could kind of be the next Ghostbusters and maybe become a franchise. I love the clever concept, and boy, did it just poop all over the screen. Pooped all over the screen. Could this guy have phoned it in anymore? And God damn it, stop wearing cargo shorts in every movie you're in. Get some pants. You lazy slob.
Oh, man.
I said it.
Yes.
I said it.
No, I do feel that the country as a whole has turned against Adam Sandler. He might still have some of his diehard fans, but I agree with you.
My brother is one of those diehard fans. I was out there for a visit, and he subjected me to Don't Mess with the Zohan. Oh, he's like, no, it's good. I'm like, okay, man.
That's another one to get erased from your memory. Swings it over to my number five, and as Matt likes to say on the show, this one's controversial because this one did make its money back. It was somewhat of a success,
okay.
But going into this one came out in 2013. We always do a summer movie preview. This was number one on my list. And in fact, for the year, it was, I think, number one that I was looking forward to. So it crushed me when I did go see it and thought it was just garbage. I'm speaking of the Neil Blomkamp, Matt Damon, Jodie Foster, Elysium.
Controversial.
Because you ended up liking this one.
I thought it was really intelligent.
Oh, I hated it.
Great movie.
The whole commentary on healthcare system, it was just a pile of junk. I mean, they didn't spend nearly enough time on Elysium or explaining Elysium.
That's the whole point.
No, I wanted more of it.
This whole thing missed you. It's about classism. I mean, he was down in the dirt
and dust.
I didn't
know that was classism.
So if they were in Elysium the whole time, that would be boring.
But they could have spent another 15 minutes talking about Elysium. It was so cool to see and talk about it. And I don't know. I didn't like that. And two, I didn't buy Matt Damon being the lowest of the low on this dirt graffiti planet and we saw so much of the exact stuff, but just so much better in District 9, where he puts on the exoskeleton type deal.
I mean,
it did not work for me at all.
That I didn't like Jodie Foster in this picture,
and I love Jodie Foster, and she was a letdown.
Other than that, though, I think this is the exact opposite about what we were saying about Suicide Squad, where this was not lazy writing. Everything happened very organically. I thought the story was clever. We meet him down in the dirt. Everybody has these aspirations to get up to Elysium. We found out why step by step. And eventually they go there, and there's a really clever conceit about how they put a clock on it in a very clever way. And I love the movie. Charlton Copley appears in this, and I love that.
He was over the top. I love him also, but he was just ridiculous.
I thought he was good.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I say, it wasn't the biggest hit at the box office either. It barely made its money back. It was supposed to be sort of a tentpole of the summer, and it was just was what it was.
Yeah, you know, Matt Damon. All right, so at number four, I have a movie that I know you were very excited for. I was too. Had a budget of $190 million plus, you know, marketing and stuff on top of that. Lost over $120 million. Tomorrowland. George Boom Boom Clooney couldn't even carry this thing.
Big name, and he blew it.
Yeah, it was a mess. A lot of messiness.
May come up later on the list.
Oh, okay. All right, then. What do you have at number four?
Okay, at number four, and this probably is going to be on your list, but okay. It was funny, me and Matt mentioned before we started recording that this list is odd because when it's a flop, a lot of times we do not see all the flops. It's a little bit easier now with seeing some screenings. It's easier to go see a flop by chance, to go see a Ghostbusters or a, you know. But go back 5 years ago, if it was a flop, I just didn't see it in the theater, you know. Mm-hmm. So I did miss some of these. But this one I did catch up to, and it's a comic book movie, so that's why I think it is on your list. And I'm speaking of the 2011 Ryan Reynolds just mess of a film, Green Lantern.
It is much higher on my list.
I didn't know much about the Green Lantern, so I think going into it, I was somewhat excited because when, I believe you told me his power of the lantern ring, is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's
the
power,
ring of power. It was the first time I ever heard of it. I didn't know Green Lantern as, you know, as a kid. I didn't know anything about him.
How could you have lived your entire childhood not knowing who the Green Lantern was? We living under a rock?
No. I mean, he's a minor superhero, right?
No.
Eh, whatever. So, I didn't know anything about him. I didn't even...
I would say he's a major superhero.
Is he really?
Yes.
Well, this was his first movie. How can you be a major superhero and have your first movie
in 2011?
Wonder Woman's
just getting her first movie.
Yeah, but she had a television show.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. There's plenty of major superheroes that... Wolverine.
Anyways, they put this thing on, and what a disaster. The CGI killed this movie. Everything killed it. Ryan Reynolds actually might have been a decent Green Lantern in the hands of another director and screenwriter, but everything here was just terrible.
Yes, we'll talk more about that in the future. So at number three, I was very tempted to just put Ghostbusters on the list, although I don't think, at least financially, it wasn't as big of a flop as people thought. So I'm going with R.I.P.D., another Ryan Reynolds. Thank goodness for Deadpool, or this guy's career would have been over. If Deadpool had flopped, I don't think we would have been seeing much more from Ryan Reynolds. The dude, Jeff Bridges, and Ryan Reynolds are basically in what amounts to a ripoff of Ghostbusters and Men in Black.
I didn't see this one.
You're not missing anything. It's a junker. I don't think many people saw it.
No. And again, this was another one. Big budget, everybody looking forward to it, and it just...
Yeah, well, they pulled it from theaters fast, and in fact, they didn't even do any press screeners at all. So that's always a bad sign.
Swings it over to my number three. This one came out in 2007, and here I am, a guy that does not like remakes or reboots nearly as much as I like originality. But in this case, I'm such a fan of the Invasion of the Body Snatchers that when they announced this movie and the cast, which was Nicole Kidman, Daniel Craig, who was just becoming the big Daniel Craig superstar that we were about to know, and they were going to make a movie entitled The Invasion, which was actually supposed to be a mix between Body Snatchers and 28 Days Later, which was a huge hit. So they were coming up with sort of a new way to do the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
And I was so pumped to see this movie. And it came out, it just died at the box office. I still went and saw it, and I realized why it died. It was just no good.
That's a shame.
It is. And I remember watching and just thinking, and I believe, throw this in the jaw box, I believe the Wachowski, they were brothers at the time, came in and actually tried to help the script, see if they had any involvement.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, this has got a chance. It's still got a chance, you know? And then you see it and you realize, like, wow, it was just a mess. It just couldn't connect.
In all fairness, I'm a big fan of the Wachowskis, but I don't think they're script doctors.
No. We've learned that now.
Yeah. Okay, so at number, what are we into our number twos already?
Wow.
Jeez, all right, this is going fast. I must admit, this is the one movie on my list I have not seen, and I guess people did see it, but it's a total stinker. I couldn't leave it off the list because it's such a piece of crap. By all accounts, it is The Lone Ranger. I'm breaking a big cinema jaw rule putting this thing on the list because I haven't seen it, but I don't want to. I saw the trailer and that was enough.
I did not see it either. My big question on that was, who wanted the Lone Ranger? A lot of times you feel as a viewer, oh, this is the right time for a remake or a reboot. And other times you wonder, who greenlit this? I don't know anybody out there that was looking forward to another Lone Ranger movie.
Agreed. And Johnny Depp, the whole thing. You know, this movie has its defenders, strangely enough. I think I kind of want to see it just to find out what the defenders are talking about. But it can't go unsaid because it was a huge, huge box office bomb as far as budget recoup goes.
No doubt.
So.
All right, swings it over to my number two. And here was a film I was really cheering for and another big, big disappointment. One of the bigger ones of all time. In fact, I was reading online that I think it was the biggest flop since Waterworld financially. And this was done by Disney.
Lone Ranger was up there too.
Oh, Lone Ranger may have topped it because this came out in 2012, and I know Lone Ranger was just after that.
It was 13, I think.
Yeah. This one came out in 2012, and as you know, I'm a big Mars fan. I'm speaking of the planet.
Oh, yes.
And I love all things usually Mars and science fiction that way. And so when they announced that they were making a John Carter film, I was so pumped. I was like, wow, big, big budget. This young guy, Taylor Kitsch, who I did not really know. He was on Friday Night Lights, I believe. But he was about to make sort of that step into movie stardom. Wow, all right, this is all lining up. It's going to be absolutely spectacular. And the thing just dead on arrival. It was directed by Andrew Stanton, who did Finding Nemo, WALL-E, and Finding Dory.
Oh, he's got a great resume.
Yeah, but animated films, you know? And when you look at John Carter, I think that was part of the issue. Well, a couple things, I think, hurt the film, but one of them being that it was just so heavy animated. Mm-hmm. And it had that weird animation, like Attack of the Clones,
yeah,
where it looks somewhat phony because they're on this like red planet and everything's got a red tint to it, and none of the animation matches the live action that's going on, and that contrast takes you completely out of the movie because you realize he's battling a fake whatever he's battling on Mars.
Are you criticizing the Star Wars prequels?
Damn right I am. And then secondly, the idea of the origin of
John Carter. Yeah.
This idea that if a guy had went to Mars from Earth, the idea was pretty cool because he'd be able to jump further because they have about a third of the gravity. So if Michael Jordan somehow was able to be transported to Mars in his prime, mm-hmm, and he could already jump.
Oh, I got a great idea for a movie about that. It's called Space Jam.
Yes. He would just be able to jump that much further. You know, mm-hmm, it would be absolutely spectacular. But as science has improved and we've learned so much about Mars, the idea of going there now and having some of the things that were going on then, maybe it wasn't the right time for it. I would have still enjoyed it if it was done right, but it wasn't. And unfortunately, this was supposed to be a humongous series. They were going on and on. They were going to make, I think, about four of these, and Disney has now given back the rights. It's washed away.
Wow. So, you know what I don't like is John Carter. I mean, really, if you're going to have like a barbarian-type dude fighting on Mars, could you name him like Tothgar?
Well, you know,
something cool, not John Carter.
One interesting thing that I had read about this movie was the title that Disney had, which is the title of the book, also is John Carter, Prince of Mars. Mm-hmm. But they had done research, and the title Mars, when it came to film, was just doing awful. Yeah, like the Red Planet, Return to Mars. There were a couple of bombs in there. And so they didn't want to put Mars in the title anymore, and they stripped it and just made it John Carter. I think John Carter, Prince of Mars, sounds way better. Give some sci-fi to it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but it didn't go with that subtitle.
It did not.
I thought it did, but no.
So that was my number two. No, my number two.
All right.
I do know my brother is a fan of the movie, so there is one person out there that has told me I'm wrong, but
it's got its apologists. All right, so at number one, I think we can guess this movie cost $325 million when you factor in the marketing costs, and only made a domestic gross of $116.6 million, net loss of $90 million. I'm talking about The Green Lantern. What a disappointment. And I like Ryan Reynolds. I'm going to go right out on that limb and say I like him, and I liked him before. It's easy to say that now after Deadpool, but there was, you know, after Green Lantern, it really left a bad taste in people's mouth. What a piece of shit.
It sure did. And I did want to mention that Green Lantern was directed by Martin Campbell, who has gone on to direct nothing since.
Soup.
Wow. Talk about suicide career, right? I mean, it's done. He makes that, and now he has done some television shows, but no feature films. And here he was the head of a $350 million project, all told, and
sucked, man.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to point to exactly why. It's just nothing adds up in the movie. Mm. And definitely Ryan Reynolds is not at his best. The suit was stupid. Are there any good moments? I think there might be one or two.
I don't think so.
I don't know. It's just so sad because I loved Green Lantern.
Yeah. I like the origin story of how he gets the ring, I guess, was sort of, if there was something rewarding there.
I like the training sequences. But you know what I don't like? Here's the thing. The Green Lantern can really do anything that his imagination can think up, right? That's the only thing that limits him is his own imagination. And time after time, artists and writers depict him as making a giant boxing glove, you know, with the light. Or here's a machine gun with the light. Come on, you know, let's do something a little different.
Yeah, get like a humongous alligator and start chomping people's heads off.
Yeah, I think That's at least better than the boxing glove.
Well, it's odd. We've both ruined our number ones. My number one actually was the 2015 George Clooney flop Tomorrowland.
Oh, okay.
And it was exactly for the right reason. I remember this came out. Again, this is a film I'm not just talking that I was excited to see for the summer. It was like maybe my number one of the year. I'm like, oh, man, I can't wait to go see Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
So excited. And, you know, it's directed by Brad Bird, who had done Ratatouille, The Incredibles, made the jump over to live action with Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Which
everything
was awesome.
Lining up. Yeah, it was like, oh my God, this is going to be so good. And the trailer worked because Tomorrowland worked. The idea that this was going to be original and these geniuses were going to go to Tomorrowland and, oh, it's going to be incredible. And then you get to it and it's just like, this is not working at all. Clooney's character didn't work for me. The story of getting to Tomorrowland and just didn't like it at all. And he was this failed kid genius and, oh, just forget it.
You know, and the... behind it all, we can see the machinations of Disney, who are really just trying to justify a really old part of Epcot Center, you know, with Tomorrowland. Like, it never connected to any of their properties, so maybe they'll make a property for it to connect to, and it'll all make sense, and, you know.
It was just junk. And it ended at the end. I forget what they're getting, their pins, I think it is, the Tomorrowland pin, and all these people are popping up, and it's supposed to be this emotional moment. And after you watch that garbage, I mean, there's nothing emotional about it other than, you know, where did I park?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. I took the L here.
Yeah. That's easier.
Yeah. All right. So that was our biggest flops. I did not have any honorable mentions.
Yeah, one
that
dishonorable mentions.
Yeah, dishonorable. One I was going to mention that was, this is really a summer flop, when it was scheduled to come out one summer, and instead they just wiped it off the summer slate, pushed it all the way to the winter of the following year, and it still flops, and that would be Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, there's really a ton. It keeps, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, not to mention another Wachowski's Speed Racer.
Yeah,
that's
what I was going to say.
Oh, jeez.
They need to get their act together.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's have another Matrix film.
I agree. If we missed your most hated flop or favorite summer movie flop, whichever it is, or you disagree with one of our picks and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is take a break. When we come back, we threw a poll question out asking the listeners, what is their favorite superhero movie thus far of the year? We got those results. We got Cinema War, and we got trivia. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Cinema Jaw is brought to you by the Wine and Shout Podcast. Check out the Wine and Shout Podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Two ladies figuring out life, love, and coping over wine. Great audio people watching, from Hooters contestants to Uber drivers. And by K&N Automotive Replacement Air Filters. They are designed to increase your horsepower and acceleration while providing outstanding engine protection. This simple-to-install air filter is backed by the K&N Million Mile Limited Warranty and will be the last air filter your vehicle will ever need. Go to knfilters.com/podcast and get a great deal on a K&N replacement air filter with free shipping, and as a bonus, you also get a free K&N hat. You can't beat it.
I love it. I just got my K&N air filter.
Did you get the hat?
Damn right I did.
That's the way to do it, and we thank them for their support.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, Matt. Having a swell time, aren't we?
As always.
Sure are. We threw a few items into the Jaw box, and we have some feedback. As we said, we threw a poll question out about the favorite superheroes. So I know Elias wants to get out of that Jaw box, and we got to congratulate the guy as well. Get out of that Jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
What's in the box?
What's going on, fellas?
Congratulations, Elias.
Thank you very much.
Hey, as a special treat, because we're doing Suicide Squad this week, I got you this gift certificate to the tattoo parlor down the street on Division.
All right.
But this is one stipulation. You have to get the tattoo on your face.
I don't know.
Just consider what you're going to get. I recommend Cinema Jaw right across your forehead.
Two episodes ago, Elias announced that he was going to the Middle Coast Film Festival. And that was what we were congratulating him for.
I'm so sorry, dude. I didn't mean to interrupt your moment of glory.
No, let's keep talking about these face tattoos.
You know what? You should get tattooed across your forehead.
What's that?
Winner.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So last year I was at the festival. It's an amazing festival. It's going to be a big South by Southwest film style of festival one day, and it's getting there. They even had the indie film The Fitz there. Have you heard about this?
I have. It's actually, big deal, yeah. Actually playing at the Gene Siskel Film Center currently here in Chicago. There,
you should go see it. I saw it. It was amazing.
It's playing Thursday. Matt, we got a date here?
Sure.
All the young Fitz stars were there, the whole dance troupe, and they did a dance routine. It was pretty awesome.
Mm.
Yeah, at the award ceremony. Anyway, so last year they had like a comedy film award, and I was assuming that if I was going to win one, I would be in the running for comedy film, because mine's a comedy, action comedy film, Think Twice, co-produced by Rye the Movie Guy. And all of a sudden they were reading out the short film award, so I was thinking, oh, they just don't have one this year, or they skipped it. And before I knew it, they just finished the sentence. The best short film is Think Twice. And
wow.
I was blown away.
That's awesome.
Like, honestly, guys, I feel like I peaked with short films. This was like a dream of mine to win any award there. So I honestly think sooner now than later, I should be going into features because, honestly, this was like one of the biggest dreams.
Awesome.
Done. Check that off your list.
Dunzo. But I'm still living in the Jawbox. So
it's getting roomier.
Yeah, well, yeah,
it seems to be working for you, dude.
Less with my awards here. Oh, I'm serious. The awards were all wooden knives because there's this woodworker people down there, and they just told them, you know, make any sort of award you want. So they came up with these different daggers. Everyone was a different style of dagger. So it's awesome to have one in the Jawbox now. I have a dagger.
Well, that's cool. Kind of scary. Yeah. I didn't know you were allowed to have weapons.
It's wooden, though. So, I mean.
Yeah, it's still dangerous.
Yeah.
Should be careful.
For sure. So we just have the one question. Did the Wachowskis help out with The Invasion? Yes. And get this. So originally wrapped in early 2006, the film underwent massive reshooting. The reason for this was the studio, which didn't like the cut that director Oliver Hirschbeil delivered. To that, Lily Wachowski, well, IMDb now calls them Lily Wachowski and Lana Wachowski, which I'm not sure that they were then. They were brought in for rewrites, and James McTeague, who directed The Matrix, directed the new scenes. So you said you saw it, Ryan.
I did.
Still don't think
no
at all.
I remember. I thought, like I said, I recalled like the Wachowskis being involved and thinking, all right, they're going to save this, and it's going to be a pretty cool movie. And no, I didn't pick up on exactly what was.
There were no slow mo bullets.
No slow mo bullets. There was just Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman hanging out in a subway tunnel and. It just wasn't good.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the Jawbox questions, but we do have some great feedback this week.
Yeah, we threw out a poll question, and because Suicide Squad, even though me and Matt gave our review and it wasn't that favorable, we did throw this question out onto Twitter. It was, what is the best comic book movie of 2016 so far? And here were your choices. Batman v Superman, Captain America Civil War, Deadpool, or X-Men Apocalypse. Those were your four choices. Elias, you got the results there?
Yes. So coming in at fourth with 4% is X-Men Apocalypse.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
The next three, I don't know.
I'm a little surprised. And I think it was better than Batman Superman.
Did you cast your vote, Matt?
I did.
You did your justice and
I did.
Cast your vote?
Yes.
Where'd you put it?
I voted for Deadpool.
All right. Nice.
And you?
I don't vote on these superhero polls. It's a superhero poll. No,
okay, so if you were to vote, where would you cast your vote?
I'd just close my eyes and push a button.
Come on. Viewers want to know.
I'd say Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
I caught up with it on DVD.
I also would say Deadpool.
Okay, so 4% X-Men.
Yes, and in third place with 9% is Batman v Superman. Wow. 9%.
Yeah, as big as that movie was supposed to be, 9%.
Yeah.
Here's the two big dogs.
All right, so in second place with 40% is Deadpool. Ryan, I should have voted.
You should have voted.
Could have made a chance.
Hey, guys, let this be a lesson to you come November, okay?
Please register to vote now. So first place is obviously Captain America Civil War with 47%.
Wow. That is big.
You know, but I get it. It's actually a really tough choice between those two. I would go Deadpool only because it was a bit more original. We hadn't seen the character before, and I liked what they did, R-rated and everything. So that's why it got my vote.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I say, I caught up with that one on Blu-ray after I had said I was not going to see it. I did eventually watch it and just loved it. So,
It's a damn good movie. Glad you finally saw it.
Yes, and we have some comments. Graham Donlin on Twitter says, Civil War had more substance, themes, and asked the audience questions. Deadpool was great and all, but Captain America Civil War will age much better.
I don't disagree. I don't. I really don't. I mean, I think, especially since a lot of the comedy in Deadpool is very specific to today, Captain America probably will age better.
All right. So, Spoilers Podcast says, Batman vs. Superman. It was honestly one of the best in-cinema naps I've ever taken.
A nice nap.
It had its moments.
That's great.
But yeah. Let's see. And Sarah of Mars says, Civil War, a perfect sequel in every way, and shows that when something is done right, don't stray too far.
I guess. Yeah, I agree.
It's funny. And stealing one from a fellow critic here in Chicago, Mark Dusick, who we've had on the show, after Suicide Squad, I saw him send out a tweet that it said, did it dawn on anybody that maybe Marvel is paying DC to make bad movies?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Conspiracy.
Yeah.
I'm sure the emails will leak eventually.
I love it. Is that everything?
Yeah, that's all.
Get back in that jaw box.
Alrighty.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
Cinema War works like this. Me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest, our engineer this week, Elias Rodriguez, gets to play judge and jury and tell the listeners who he thinks won this one. And it's important because we're fighting for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Well, Matt, they are making another live-action movie from an animated film. Elias, tell the jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, with Pete's Dragon opening this week, is the current trend of live-action adaptations of animated classics a good thing, or does it suck? Matt, you'll be fighting, it's a good thing. Rye, you'll be fighting, it sucks. That's your quote of this episode, your little tagline. let's let this live-action, but very animated, Cinema War begin.
Today's dazzling special effects can open up, sadly, forgotten properties to a new generation. With Life of Pi-level CG animals, the Disney back catalog is rife with opportunities for eye candy.
Matt, you suck. I can actually see the idea of taking one classic animated film and adapting it to live action. But for it to turn into a trend and for us to have to suffer more remakes while originality gets shoved to the side is disappointing. Make no mistake about this, this is more rehash from Hollywood.
All right, there's a reason why many Disney tales are based on thousand-year-old fables and myths. There's a reason why stories, old stories, have intrinsic value. These are timeless tales with a message to pass on to future generations. Our VHS of Pete's Dragon got stuck in the machine back in the 80s. Let's let a new generation enjoy with a modern film.
All right, Matt, years ago, and this is a true story, Ted Turner had the bright idea to colorize all black and white films. Great Scott, what a moron. He totally sucks. Black and white films had their own artistic angle. Such is the case with these wonderful animated classics. Animation is an art form that should be respected just as much as the live action picture. Why remake something that is a classic?
I agree with that, and I'll address it in a future point here, actually. First of all, you liked The Jungle Book. Special effects aside, times change, and popular worries and opinions change with them. Updated stories give a chance for the storytellers to adapt to today's issues and make these timeless tales communicate their message in a way young audiences can relate to better.
Matt, if you had it your way, it will never stop. Soon we will have live adaptations of Toy Story, Finding Nemo, and WALL-E. There will be plenty.
You can play Woody.
Meanwhile, there are plenty of young, eager filmmakers out there trying to prove themselves and have original stories to tell. I'd rather hear from them than to see another remake.
There are no original stories. And here's the thing. I love animation. And many of these live adaptations have plenty of animation to enjoy. This is a new art form, and like it or not, the tide of time cannot be stemmed.
Exactly. Why is it even called live action remake in the first place? Take The Jungle Book, for instance. Besides the boy actor, the rest of the film is computer generated, aka animated. So all this amounts to is that they are straight up remakes with fancier animation. Well, call me old-fashioned, but I'll take the classics over the new stuff any day of the week.
Old-fashioned.
And I like the drink. Whew, we button heads here on Cinema War. As always, we throw it to our guest, our engineer, Elias. What did you think of this Cinema War?
So I have a feeling I know why Rye wanted me to judge this and not Phil the editor with his line that he wants young filmmakers to make films.
Oh, you pandering son of a bitch.
You don't pander.
I pander.
Yeah.
I will say that Matt had a great point with the, or I like the touch about your VHS getting caught. That really warmed me up. But then right after Rye had his points, which I feel like might have been the knockout blow of the color, the Ted Turner move to colorize.
I don't know what Ted Turner's mistakes have to do, have to bear
it's
on
just,
this
it's
argument.
It's just a good example. You know, it's not the exact, anyway, Rye gets it.
Yes.
This is the only way you were going to win a Cinema War.
Finally breaks the streak, right? Yeah. I needed this.
You get Elias on your side. I'll get my revenge. My lossless trivia streak will continue.
Earns me 20 seconds of jaw time to rant, rave on whatever I want. And I wanted to mention a television. It's really interesting because it is being considered end of the year awards. It will be considered as a feature film. And it is because it played in the right theaters for the right amount of time to be considered for best documentary and such. I'm speaking of the wonderful ABC ESPN series, O.J. Made in America. It is a 5-part series, 7.5 hours long. I devoured this thing in 2 sittings. I loved it. And I grew up watching the O.J. stuff, not thinking I was going to be turned on to anything new, but this documentary really has its finger right on the pulse of what's going on to this in this country still today and what was going on during the OJ trial. It's a microcosm of everything that's wrong and issues that we still face. Loved it. If you have a chance, it's streaming on the ESPN app, and it's wonderful. So that's my 20 seconds.
Wow. Is that a free app, the ESPN app?
You got to have a cable subscription. But if you know somebody that has a cable subscription.
Hey, do you have a cable subscription right
now? I don't, but I know people.
Okay.
You know, some of the fans of Cinema Jaw sometimes help me out.
Hey, help me out.
Yeah. Still looking for a HBO Go password.
Same here.
Had that for years.
All right, it's trivia time?
It's trivia time.
Oh, yeah.
In honor of Sausage Party, Seth Rogen helped write the movie, and he is a voice of the sausage. We are playing Seth Rogen movie trivia. It's always heated here, so if you gentlemen don't mind moving a little bit over, Matt, I know you. Yep, there you go. Thank you. All right, well done. It works like this. Elias, you're our guest and engineer. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get hung up on a question,
I'm gonna beat you.
You get one rescue. Rescue me, Ryan. I have clues to all the questions.
As the Jawheads may have heard in that mini episode, I went second. And honestly, if I would have went first that one, I definitely would have lost. So I'm going to go second. I'm going to let Matt go first.
I think if I had gone to Middle Coast Film Fest, he would have given me the win.
Question one over to Matt K. Matt, in 2005, Seth Rogen starred in Knocked Up with what actress?
That is, can I just give you her last name?
No. Full name for this.
You could give me her last name.
Wow. Question number one. It's supposed to be the easy ones.
Yeah. It's,
oh yeah, totally.
Katherine Heigl.
That was one of the questions in that mini episode of the first ever trivia. Between
Very simple.
One of the answers, Katherine Heigl.
All right. Question two over to Elias. In 2007, Seth Rogen showed up in Superbad as police officer Michaels. What actor played his partner, Officer Slater, in the film?
Oh man.
Two cops in Superbad.
I know the guy.
Seth Rogen and who?
And I know the characters he plays. So if the clue is one of the characters, I wouldn't know. It's not coming to me. I'm just going to say a name, which I know it isn't Jason Sudeikis.
Matt, you can blow this thing wide open with a steal here. Do you got that actor's name that
I
was also
so.
In Superbad?
I could be wrong. Bill Hader?
Yeah. Wow. 2-0, Matt K.
The streak continues.
Question three is over to a Matt. Seth Rogen has starred in one film directed by Kevin Smith. It came out in 2008. Name it.
Scott and Miri Make a Porno.
Need a full name here. One more time.
I think he just gave you the name.
Is that it?
That's his answer. That's got to be his answer. Buzz him.
Wait.
We play by exact rules here. Obviously, we need exact titles.
Yeah, it's Scott and Miri Make a Porno. That's wrong?
Yes. That is incorrect. You got a chance for a steal here, Elias, and to get back into the ballgame.
Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Wow. Wow. You got to be, I mean, when it's a heated contest like this,
no,
you
understand. I understand.
It is now 2-1, Matt Kay, and Elias can tie it up right here. Elias, 1 year after lending his voice to Kung Fu Panda, Seth Rogen voiced another animated movie in which a woman is transformed into a giant. Other voices in the movie were Reese Witherspoon and Stephen Colbert. Name it.
Oh, man. I have no idea what this movie was. It was animated, you said, right?
Animated film. Seth Rogen, Reese Witherspoon, Stephen Colbert. Woman turns into a giant at one point.
I am going to... Since it's an animated film and Matt Kay watches a lot of animated films with his son, Pitchman Parker, I'm going to go for the Rescue Me Ryan.
Whoa, Rescue Me Ryan. Question number 4. What was the name of that Seth Rogen animated film? And your clue is Bad Guys Against Bad Guys from Outer Space. Bad Guys versus Bad Guys from Outer Space.
Cowboys versus Aliens?
Wow. Wow. Still 2-1. Matt Kay, I don't know if it's a poker face, but you look confused.
I am confused. Read the question one more time.
Oh, my goodness. Seth Rogen voiced this animated film in which a woman was transformed into a giant. Other voices in the movie were Reese Witherspoon and Stephen Colbert. The clue was Monsters versus Monsters from Outer Space.
Wait, no, it
was Bad Guys.
It was Bad Guys. Oh. You just gave it up.
Damn.
He gave it up?
Nope.
Mm.
I don't know it. I still don't know it.
That's good. Phil's even laughing over here.
Oh, wait. I think I do know
this
it.
This would not be fair.
It's Monsters versus Aliens.
That's not...
Wow. Wow. I screwed that one up.
You totally
he
did.
He wouldn't have known.
I wouldn't have known. Dude.
Sorry about that, Elias. Totally sorry about
unreal.
That. I did give it away. Totally. I, reading the clues here.
I'm
not used to reading the clues. Usually it's Elias'
job. Matt's going to win. It's going to be
asterisk. I'm kicking your ass.
There is still a chance
here. There can't be an asterisk, so you got to come up with another question.
And because of that, Elias does, you think this is fair enough, Elias gets one more rescue. It's fair?
Barely.
No, are you kidding? I almost think that's unfair. You don't like two rescues?
It's 3-1. How about this? You get Matt's other rescue. You're out of rescues, and Elias gets a rescue.
That's a little bit better, because
I
handed
did screw
him
up.
That.
I did screw up.
You just handed him the answer.
All right, okay. Fine.
Everybody okay with that?
If it'll mean no butt hurt from you.
That's what we're going to do. It's 3-1, Matt K. Elias, you still have a rescue.
Oh, boy.
All right. Wow. This is really bad, because question 5 now is over to Matt K. Matt, Seth Rogen played Steve Wozniak in the 2015 film Steve Jobs. Who directed the film?
Who directed that film?
Your outer rescues. You have surrendered it to Elias.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Jesus.
They're both thinking. Both got their poker faces on.
I know it.
Oh, my goodness. Time constraints, though. Time constraints. 3 seconds.
Come on.
All right. We'll go 4 seconds. Now 3 seconds. And 2 seconds. Anything?
Yeah. It's, nuts.
Sorry. Incorrect. Can't give you all day long.
Or give you the answers every
time. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's still 3-1, Matt Kay. Elias, you got a chance for a steal here.
Could I have the question again?
Yes. Seth Rogen played Steve Wozniak in 2015's Steve Jobs. Who directed that film?
Wait, was that the... Oh, you guys can't answer this.
You do have a rescue, though.
No. Oh, God. Wait a second. Oh, man. I had one answer, but then that just completely changed. Oh, man.
But it's a really...
What question number is this?
This is question 5.
Oh, we got a little bit of a...
Not that much, because he's up 3-1.
He is up 3-1. I'm just going to go with what was in my head. David Fincher?
Danny Boyle.
Danny
Boyle.
Remember.
Come on, guys.
Damn.
Wow. All right, it is 3-1.
And it was Jobs, not the Ashton Kutcher one.
Right. Oh, Jobs. I was saying Steve Jobs. You knew what I was talking
about.
No,
you said the question right. He was trying to figure out.
Yeah. Right.
All right. All right. It is still 3-1. Question 6 over to Elias. In 2011, the movie 50-50, Seth Rogen's best friend, Seth Rogen is best... Hold on. I wrote this question. Let me read it. All right. Question six over to Elias. In 2011's movie 50-50, Seth Rogen's best friend Adam has cancer and must fight for his life. Who played Adam in the movie?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
3-2. It's back to a ball game. Matt is out of lifelines, too. How interesting.
See? That comes into play.
It does, yeah. Question seven over to Matt.
I'll totally use it on this question.
Matt, in 2014's comedy Neighbors, it proved to be very popular. They made a sequel now. What actress plays Seth Rogen's wife in those films?
Zac Efron.
He is in those, but not his wife. We throw it over to Elias. He has a chance for a steal game up.
I will use the Rescue Me Ryan. Wow. The second one.
Question number seven over to Rescue Me Ryan. What actress plays Seth Rogen's wife in Neighbors? And your clue is also stars in Bridesmaids and Get Him to the Greek.
I'm just not exactly sure about her actual name. I was hoping you would give me like initials or whatever you normally do. Whatever I normally do since I write the question.
I'm not going to burn you that way.
Let's see. Wait a second. Rose Byrne?
Damn it. Come on now. You gave him an extra.
Wow. What do you mean?
That is so unfair.
I swear to God, though, I swear in everything that I was going to say Rose Byrne.
This whole thing is rigged.
I swear. And then he solidified it.
Yeah.
It is tied up 3-3. Elias, you can win this thing on a walk-off. Question eight is over to you. In 2009, Seth Rogen played a mall security guard, Ronnie Barnhard. What was the name of that movie?
Observe and Protect? Is this just like that one earlier that Matt got? Did I get another chance?
Wow. He has blown it. He has blown the walk-off. Wow. Matt, you got a chance for a steal and to win the game outright. If not, it comes down to an epic tiebreaker.
Okay, what's the question?
In 2009, Seth Rogen played a mall security guard, uh-huh, Ronnie Barnhard. What was the name of that movie?
2009. It's not Paul Blart Mall Cop. That's the Kevin James vehicle. but since I really don't know, I'm going to say, is it Paul Blart Mall Cop? Oh, what is it?
Elias was one word off. We were looking for Observe and Report. Observe and Report, not Protect.
Yeah.
Wow. So it comes down to this. It is tied 3-3, and the jawbreaker is this. Better impersonation of Seth Rogen's laugh. Me and Phil are going to be judges. Here is an example of Seth Rogen's laugh. Matt, you go first. Pretty decent.
Yeah, not bad.
That just went right in the mind.
Wow.
That was awesome. Wow, that is a tough one. We'll call it a draw.
I'm going to give that to Elias if I was judging.
Here's the real jawbreaker, guys. Oh, age of Kevin Smith closest to.
Wow.
Elias, you got to guess.
I will say 44.
Lock him in at 44, Phil. Matt, you got a guess?
That is a damn good guess. So I'm just going off of when Clerks came out and how old I was and how much older he must have been than me in order to pull that off. So I would say he's probably a little bit older than 44. I will go 46.
We give that, somebody actually nailed it on the head. He's 46.
No!
Well done, Matt Kay.
Yes!
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
My undefeated streak remains.
Wow.
That was something.
Always an epic battle between Matt and I.
That was won by me.
But.
Wow. I mean, controversy. I gave an answer away during a clue. Holy cow.
Yeah. Twice, right?
Unbelievable.
Well, I would have said, anyway.
Rose Byrne, whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Good stuff. Brings us to the end of a great jaw.
Indeed.
First, before we wrap things up, we want to read the riddle one more time. Again, if you know the answer to this riddle, you can win a prize. We are giving away a Cinema Jaw prize pack and also the first jaw head to get to 5 correct answers, and we are keeping correct answers in a pile, will win a mega prize. So if you know the answer to this riddle, shoot us an email, feedback@cinemajaw.com, direct message us on Twitter or Facebook. Matt, hit us with that riddle.
Diane Keaton has played my mom. I have been engaged to someone who travels through time twice and even married to one of them. I like to play newspaper reporters and in 2012 suffered from amnesia. Who am I?
Wow. Hit us up. It's been a great job, Matthew.
Indeed.
Yes. First and foremost, we got to thank all our sponsors.
Thanks to all the sponsors and to the Chicago Podcast Co-op who help us get those sponsors.
Big thanks to Editor Phil for always editing in the great shows.
Thanks, Phil.
And to the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you, guys.
If you like this episode of Cinema Jaw, please subscribe to us on iTunes. If you do, leave us a review like the Jawheads do. We will read them on the show, and all those reviews help attract new listeners.
Yes, go on our Facebook page. You know what? They updated the look of Facebook pages. So if you haven't seen that yet, go to ours, facebook.com/cinemajaw. Give us a like. And also write us all this feedback and give us the riddle answers and feedback@cinemajaw.com.
And we're on Instagram, where they recently released Snapchat-like functionality called Instagram Stories. We're going to put some up tonight, so check us out there as well.
Also, @cinemajaw on Twitter. Heck, we're @cinemajaw everywhere on social media. Until next week, I'm Rye, the movie guy.
I'm Matt Kay.
And keep on jawing about the movies.